I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 27th of April. A large number of workers in this country don't know what days or how many hours they will work in a week. A 2014 University of Chicago study shows 41% of workers who are 26 to 32 years old don't know their work schedules at least a week in advance. 74% work a different number of hours week to week, and that can make life rather difficult, hard to budget. It can also affect eligibility for public benefits. Attorneys in 8 states and D.C. are scrutinizing scheduling practices of more than a dozen large retailers. San Francisco has implemented legislation attempting to address the issue of scheduling, requiring schedules to be given out with 14 days notice and extra pay given to workers who are given last-minute scheduling changes. Seattle City Council has drafted scheduling regulations, which should pass this summer. Why is variable scheduling so widespread? Will we be seeing more regulation like that in San Francisco? Our guest this hour is Professor Susan Lambert. She is Associate Professor of Social Service Administration at the University of Chicago. And in the last 2 decades, she has conducted studies of hourly jobs and workplace practices in private firms in several industries and has analyzed national survey data on the prevalence of problematic scheduling practices in the United States. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her, and particularly interested in those of you who are working hours that are very erratic. You don't know, it might be 12 hours one week and 40 hours the next week, and who may be given schedules sometimes the day of the day that you have to work. Should this be regulated in some ways? Are there benefits to having a flexible schedule, both for the employees and for the employers? We're welcoming your thoughts at 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We are on Twitter as well, and that is at K Dunn Show. So we'd love to hear from you during the course of the hour. Susan Lambert, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Hello.
Very
nice. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you so much. It is amazing how many workers in this country simply don't have a very fixed schedule at all.
Yes. I have been studying employer practices kind of up close and personal for almost 25, 30 years now, and I would see these scheduling practices in the firms that I studied, but we didn't really have national data to show how widespread they are. And so my colleague Julianne Henley and I had the opportunity to work with the Bureau of Labor Statistics to add some new questions in the, one of the national surveys. And I have to say, when we got the percentages back, we called the Bureau of Labor Statistics researchers to say, how can this be so high?
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, the data, you know, kind of those data points have been replicated, so we're pretty confident of how widespread it is.
Is it in certain industries, Professor Lambert?
Well, it certainly is. Certain industries are at especially high risk, and so and in both what we would consider to be term male-dominated industries and also female-dominated industries or more balanced. So, for example, in food service, 88% of workers report fluctuation in their weekly hours, averaging about 70% of what they report as their usual hours, and that's just huge. 66% say that they know their schedule a week or less in advance, and 41% say that their employer decides when they're going to work without any input from them. But it's also high in construction and production work, and manufacturing and production. 73% report fluctuating hours that vary by 40% from week to week, and 56% are only knowing their schedule a week or less in advance, and 67% in that industry say their employer decides their schedule without their input, and that those are mostly, you know, jobs filled by men.
Mm-hmm. And why are employers doing this?
Well, the rationale is for what we call just-in-time scheduling. which is, you know, not the rigidity of having, you know, a schedule you can't change, but having being able to schedule workers for different hours and different shifts and, you know, different days. That the rationale is that business needs to stay nimble and very much tie the number of workers that you have to the demand for service or products. That has always been the case, of course. You need more workers at busy times than, right? I mean, it's just of course. But the, really a difference that's happened is how close businesses are trying to make that. So it used to be, sure, you know, you need more, for example, retail people, you know, in October, November, and December than you do in January and February. But how about at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon compared to 4 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
And so the time frames that are being looked at now with the aid of technology and just kind of new sensibilities are focused on these micro adjustments that create a very different kind of unpredictability and instability in the lives of workers.
Mm. Yeah, I was reading this article that said that there's this very sophisticated software now, so you can use previous sales data to forecast labor needs down to the quarter hour.
Yeah, and those tools can be very powerful in for, you know, also creating very predictable and stable schedules for workers. It depends on how they're used. And so some of the forecasting, they're called workforce optimization systems, and part of that system will be the forecasting. And some of the, and many of the software vendors will brag about being able to predict labor, you know, that kind of demand with over 90-95% even accuracy, as you say, in these very short increments.
Mm-hmm.
And not just 2 weeks out, but 16 weeks out.
Mm.
And so if that's the case, and they will, you know, have, they have data to show that, then it's a wonder why that predictability can't be passed on to workers through more, through schedules posted further in advance and by capturing, you know, kind of the stability that is there and passing it on to workers.
I can't imagine that too many of these many, many workers who have such erratic shifts are happy with that. You've got all kinds of issues. If you have children, getting child care that has to vary from day to day and from week to week is highly problematic. If you have to schedule just about anything in your life and you don't know if you're working or not, how can you?
Yeah, there is a vast amount of, right, well, you don't, nobody needs research evidence to
right.
say that that's a problem, but there is research evidence by a growing kind of cadre of researchers documenting how these unpredictable and unstable schedules show up in terms of, for example, everyday practices that with a parent. So child development experts, for example, tell us that one of the things that children really benefit from a routine.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it very hard to have routines around homework time, bedtime routines. And so it, you know, it interferes with these very important family kind of rituals and processes that support healthy child development. Other researchers, of course, show how it's, you know, what we see is a growing economic insecurity and instability in the U.S., mm-hmm. and ours are a part of that.
There also are public benefits that are contingent on the number of hours you work, right? To be eligible for Family and Medical Leave Act, you have to work 1,250 hours for the same employer, stayed with that employer for at least a year before you're covered by that. Unemployment insurance, Social Security benefits, all of those can change depending on how many hours you're working.
Yeah, and right, they're almost all of our unemployment insurance, of course, even, you know, if you think about it in the long-term Social Security, right, it depends on how many hours you've worked. It's a matter of your wages, but when you're paid by the hour, and the majority of workers in this country are paid by the hour, it's a matter of your hours and how many you've accrued. And so, right, I mean, one of the kind of the sad things is that families who are in need of some kind of public support, often there's a work requirement that goes along with that. And so when they don't, through no fault of their own, their hours get cut by their employer, and then they're also at risk of losing their public benefits at just the time when they could use more public benefits and more support because they're not earning as much from their job.
Mm-hmm. So there are some cities and there are some attorneys in 8 states, I understand. San Francisco is the only city, as far as I know, maybe you know of others, that has legislation that looks at this issue of scheduling, which is interesting. Seattle is considering legislation, the city council, and it should be passed sometime this summer. Can you tell me who's made a difference here? Is it San Francisco mostly?
What do you mean? Who's made a difference
in terms of addressing this issue? They evidently their retail worker bill of rights. It's not
right.
Everybody. Last summer, schedules must be given out 14 days notice. Extra pay given to workers who are given last minute scheduling changes, mm-hmm. etc.
Yeah. So there's actually 13 states right now that have some kind of scheduling legislation.
Really?
Pending. Yes. It's. Growing like, a wildfire. And D.C. is another one, another area that is very close to, passing a municipality-level legislation. California is also introducing legislation. And what has made a difference, I would argue, is that our workers' groups, the AFL-CIO, the American, the AFL-CIO has been very much out front, but also workers groups like our Walmart and the Center for Popular Democracy and a number of advocacy organizations that advocate on the behalf of low-paid women and other workers have really brought this issue to the front. I think part of it builds on the Fight for 15 and the momentum around that. And once you start talking about wages, you have to also talk about hours, because when you're paid by the hours, by the hour, if you don't get enough hours, it doesn't really matter how much your hourly wage is.
Right. So there are a number of these workers who have no say whatsoever in the hours that they work, really?
50% of the respondents in the national survey I mentioned before said that their employer decides their start and ending times without their input.
Hmm. Is that
another 32% of hourly workers say their employer decides, but they have at least some input.
No, it's not very many. Is this a change, do you know? Are we seeing this increasing over the last few years, and it didn't always used to be so?
We don't see that big of a change in terms of control in the national data sets. In fact, when we look at national data, we see that there is an increase in worker flexibility, which is about control over when and where you work. One of the things that, of course, that is happening in the United States is that we have this growing stratification in terms of income and,
Sure do.
Right? And so it's not just about income. It's about the conditions of work as well. And so some people have benefited from increases in flexibility, but there's a group of workers who are really being left behind. And so, certainly one of the things that I've tried to do in my work is to highlight the difference between having your hours vary because your employer's having them vary versus, they're varying because you're deciding it. I mean, one feels like flexibility. The other is really instability and insecurity.
Well, let's hear from those who are affected by this and from employers, too, who may feel it necessary for whatever reason to have people on a schedule that varies from week to week and where you can't plan that far in ahead. But I'm sure considering the numbers that Susan has cited for us just now, there are many of you who have these kinds of schedules. You don't know when you're working from week to week. When are you notified of what your work schedule is going to be? Would you benefit from legislation that has been, that is under consideration in quite a few states and has passed in San Francisco and will soon pass in Seattle that doesn't cover all industries but does require schedules to be given out with a 14-day notice, extra pay if you are given a change at the very last minute, and also compensate workers who are on a standby situation. We welcome your phone calls. We'd like to hear from you, actually. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for you right now. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can find us on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, the phones are humming here. Let's go to phone calls now. Our guest this hour has been studying what's been going on with workers for quite some time. Susan Lambert is Associate Professor of Social Service Administration at the University of Chicago, and she looks at how everyday employer practices shape the odds that ordinary working people can earn a decent living and fulfill their caregiving responsibilities. For 20 years now, she's conducted studies of hourly jobs and workplace practices in private firms in several industries and has also analyzed the national data. We start our calls with Sue in Appleton. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As I'm listening to this, I think the emphasis is on low-wage workers, but I wanted to make the point that this is really happening, I think, across all professional fields, manual labor, all different types of workplace settings, and it's really a push from up above to streamline and increase profits for companies and businesses, but, you know, it really impacts family life. And for us personally, my husband has a steady job and he has benefits, but he has very little flexibility in being able to leave his workplace. So I'm in a position where I did take a position that's very flexible hours, and I find out a lot of times the morning of if I'm going to work that day or not. And so it works for us because I can say no, but there's no benefits, there's no regularity in the scheduling. And so if I were offered a job that had more regularity but still had that flexibility, it would, you know, give us more stability too. So
right.
We never know. We don't spend our money until we get it first because we just don't know what the hours are going to look like.
Well, that's really hard.
And I think you here in the Fox Valley, it's happened, you know, 10, 20 years ago, they laid off a lot of engineers, and then those engineers were brought on as flex positions or temporary workers. So It all just decreased those benefits and costs for businesses at that time, too.
Yeah, so you wake up in the morning and you don't know if you're going to get a phone call or not.
Right.
Oh, that's hard.
You know, that's a really good point that, I mean, I think, you know, I want to go back to kind of the national data, too. Sue is highlighting that, you know, these practices are so widespread in the labor market. There are, you know, some occupations where the percentages are above kind of the mean, but there's no occupation that we could find where a substantial percentage of workers kind of escape from these more precarious scheduling practices, at least one or two of them in combination. And one of the things she's also pointing out is how these lean staffing models of businesses play out in firms and all kinds of jobs. So firms are trying to save on outlays for labor by only using the number of hours that they think they need in order to meet some kind of demand. And again, they're trying to keep it so tight that it creates this kind of unpredictability and stability in the lives of workers. And also, I would argue, as a consumer, often, you know, when you go into a business, often there's just not enough people there to help you. And so there's all those and those costs are never counted by businesses in terms of what would happen if there were more people to be able to provide customer service.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. So that is happening. You'll be at a store and you have to go all the way through to the store to find a registry that's open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Sue, very much for your call. Nikki in Elkhorn, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Sure, Nikki.
I just wanted to touch base. It was funny, I laughed when she mentioned the two fields that, you know, the schedules vary. Me, being a former restaurant manager, had a schedule that was never set for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm in construction, my schedule is literally sent out the day before. So my start time always varies, my end time always varies. It makes it more difficult. You know, if I wanted to go to a doctor, set up an appointment, I'm always working during the day. I don't know when I'm going to end, trying to pick up my brother or sister from school or my nephew. And the schedule always varies, so it makes it harder to even try to plan day-to-day in normal everyday life type styles that you would normally do.
And why do they do it that way, Nikki?
With us, with our schedule, it's so hard because with the construction, we get on add-ons, we can have cancellations. It doesn't matter. Sometimes there will be days that we might have 3 units to do, and there might be another day where we might have 5 just because of that's the way that the calls are coming in.
Right.
So some days I might work, some days I might actually have off. My start time might be at 9 o'clock one day, and I'll finish at 2. I might start at 7:45 one day and end at 7 o'clock at night. Mm. So it varies literally day to day, and I don't have a set schedule for a week or 2 weeks in advance. It sucks.
Susan, is it just a matter of course that there would be certain professions where it would have to be day-to-day because of what Nikki just described, or are there ways to make it more regular for employees?
You know, I think overall, certainly employers need some flexibility around labor in every industry. But the question is, how do employers manage it? And I think of, like, firefighters, I have to say, is that you don't know exactly when there's going to be a fire, but you know you need to have firefighters ready to go. And the way that has been managed is to have, you know, firefighters come and they are ready to go when needed. And they have pretty darn steady jobs and, you know, so that is one way to manage those kinds of jobs. Now, do I think that every job can be like a firefighter? Of course not. But the question is, how flexible does it need? How variable is it? And, for example, in retail, which is what I know best, is that every hour isn't unpredictable. Somebody has to open a store. Somebody has to close it. You need so many people there just to, you know, stop shrinkage or what's called, you know, theft walking out the doors. And so there's a certain amount of stability that is there. And, you know, how much more stability there is might vary by business and industry, but there is some stability and some predictability.
Mm-hmm. Matt in Madison. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I disagree with both of you on this topic. I think that too often we come up with or we see issues that people face, and we are really quick to legislate. And not every issue, you know, needs legislation. You know, people came to this country to build a business and to achieve the American dream. They didn't come to this country to, you know, sometimes with nothing, to build a business and be told by the government, you know, how to schedule their employees. I just think that's wrong. I think that's a burden that, you know, is unneeded on business owners.
Well, Matt, put yourself in the shoes of somebody who's finding, you know, who's got a job, but you also have family responsibilities. You have children who need to be picked up from daycare. Your daycare needs a schedule. Shouldn't there be some input, at least, from the employee as to what the schedule is going to be so that it can be, you know, family friendly?
No, I mean, I've never had a job where I could walk in and tell my employer, hey, this is when I'm going to work. That's just not how it works. And I know that's a pretty blasé answer for you, but the employer is the employer for a reason. If you want a job, that you can pick your hours, go start a business.
What about
work for yourself?
And what about the number of people who are being called maybe the day of, the day before you come in and work? Is that fair?
It's not an ideal situation, but it doesn't mean that we need to legislate and tell the employer how they need to conduct their, you know, their operations. I mean, obviously, it's a different story if they're abusing their employees or if they are breaking the law. Which yes, you know, that needs to be dealt with. But when it comes to the government coming in and telling business owners how to run their businesses, that is not what this country is about.
Professor Lambert, while there are a lot of governments and attorneys and states who are looking at doing just that, is it wrong for them, for the government to be involved here? Is it a matter of, you know, free enterprise, really?
My view is that we need to have some foundational employment protections for all workers in the country. And we have something called the Fair Labor Standards Act that was enacted in law in 1938. There's been a few modifications to it. The protections that we have under that law we still need, but that workers face additional risks in today's economy. And so this is a matter of not telling employers exactly what they have to do in terms of scheduling. I mean, most of it is not. It is a matter of setting some basic, you know, it's the bottom standard. Employers can do more than that. You know, for example, I think of the Retail Workers Bill of Rights that has a predictability premium. And if an employer makes a change to a schedule that was posted within a very short amount of time, then the employer pays an additional hour wage to the employee. That does not keep the business from changing that employee's work schedule. The employer is completely free to do that, but it just means that the risk of making last-minute adjustment isn't totally borne by the employee. There's a little compensation in the same way that we have overtime laws,
right,
that, you know, pay people for accommodating employers need to have people work more than what we consider to be a conventional work week.
Child labor laws. I mean, we have a lot of cases where government has had to intervene. Thanks, Matt, for the call. We have an email from a stagehand. He has to work a split shift. He read about one study that shows that working split shifts and changes in shifts have the highest rates of cancer. Do you, Susan, know anything about the health effects of these kinds of schedules?
Oh, I do not know that study, but we do know that that split shifts are one of the most are the kinds of shifts that raise people's cortisol and stress rates, you know, high. And there are other kinds of scheduling practices as well.
Let's go to Judith in Wausau. Hi, Judith.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And thank you for a great program. I listen to your program often and always appreciate it.
Thank you, Judith.
Couple of comments. The first being, my finding is when people are scheduled in this way, that very often the employer avoids paying, having to provide vacation or sick pay. So if something serious happens to the person, or for instance, they just get a bad case of the flu, they have no financial support during that time. They probably also have no health insurance. And they never even have a week during the year when they have no work, when they can spend time with family, friends, pursue other things, get their house cleaned, etc. One of the other comments is I really find that it's a way to discourage the employment of people with disabilities or chronic illnesses, as well as to eradicate them from a company. For instance, someone who is diabetic, as I am myself, needs to see a doctor 4 times a year, needs to see a diabetes specialist, an eye doctor at least once a year, it could be more often, a dentist 4 times a year, a podiatrist once a year. This can be impossible to schedule when you only have a week's notice at best. As I'm sure you know, it's very hard to get in to see doctors these days, and many of my appointments are scheduled 3 to 6 months in advance,
mm-hmm.
so that they're already on the books. And once you cancel them, it can take you another 3 to 6 months to find another appointment. Last of all, I would just comment that your guest's comment about the way technology to analyze how many work hours are needed during this and such a time period was very interesting, because I find that such programs are generally used to dictate how many people or how many work hours you need to fill, but it reduces people to the level of machines rather than looking at how, warning people, you know, 6 months in advance, this is going to be our busy season and you
right.
can expect to work X number of hours and this is how this company operates. So you have some ability to look forward and see that and realize I shouldn't schedule doctor's appointments, dentist appointments, whatever, at that time. I'm going to be very busy. Instead of doing that, they do this just-in-time business, which is how you operate with machines.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting point. A little courtesy. Nothing wrong with a little courtesy, Susan.
Yeah, and I mean, absolutely. This is what I think, too. It's treating people as though they're just another, you know, part of kind of the merchandising or the machines that are involved. And, that is exactly it. And people become ours, not employees, but ours. How many hours do I need? Not how many people. And so there is this very, very much a disconnect between those models and the distancing with the effects on of workers' lives. And, you know, you're raising a very good point, too, about this vacation and sick leave. I mean, those are also benefits, not just public benefits, but employer benefits that are based on the number of hours you work. And increasingly, employers are doing this definition of benefit waiting periods that it used to be maybe you get your 90 days in and you get benefits. And now if you get benefits at all, a number of employers are doing, they might say 90 days, but then if you read the fine print, it's 90 full work days. And so if you're a part-time worker, it might take you 6 or 8 months to qualify for the benefits that you thought you were going to be eligible for after 90 days.
Thank you, Judith, so much for your call. Kate in Whitewater, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Kate, you?
Great, thank
Good.
You. I just wanted to quick touch on that last topic they had said, too. You know, what's interesting with that is you find a lot of temp workers. There's so many temp agencies, and that's the way that a lot of hiring is happening. And I think I see a lot of people really not getting hired on. They stay with that temp agency for so long, and the company won't hire them and won't hire them. And then once they do get hired, they have to go through all that other stuff, and it's definitely an issue. And then, you know, you don't have the days off and whatnot. But specifically, I just wanted to comment on the firefighter comment and talking about how that's an example of people being there and balancing a schedule between, you know, just having people there when you need them. And what's interesting is even that system is failing. So many cities have, you know, their core firefighters are volunteer. It's not really a great paid position like it was, you know, 30, 50 years ago. And I think that's just really a sad example of how far we've come. These are people who are putting their lives on the line on a regular basis, and we're asking them to do it as volunteers, not only not getting paid, but no benefits. I mean, that's an issue.
Susan.
No, that's, I, you know, in Chicago here, we have unionized firefighters, so I don't know that, you know, I will look into, you know, what's happening to their jobs.
Thank you so much for your call. This hour of the program, we are talking with Professor Susan Lambert. She's Associate Professor of Social Service Administration, University of Chicago. And for 20 years now, she's been conducting studies of hourly jobs, workplace practices in private firms in several industries. And we have found, she has found, that there are a huge number of workers who are hourly workers who have very little idea what their schedule is is going to be. They work a different number of hours from week to week, which makes it hard to budget. It also makes people harder for them to get health benefits and unemployment insurance, that kind of thing. So what's going on is that there are attorneys in a number of states and D.C. looking at scheduling practices of more than a dozen large retailers. San Francisco has already regulated scheduling. Seattle is about to do the same. Do we need legislation that will address the issue of scheduling and make it easier for people to have jobs that are a little bit more regular and also be able to take care of their children and family members and have a life outside of work, that their day-to-day life is not totally determined by whether or not they're going to get a phone call saying, we need you to work today. Here's our phone number. We have a couple lines open. They have been busy. We have one line open. I'm sorry. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at @KDunnShow. I am Kathleen Dunn, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls for Susan, Jerry, and Racine. Hi.
Hello. I just kind of wanted to respond to the caller from Madison. Matt, we don't need the government to come in and regulate things of this nature. Well, we had a long period of time in this country where we did just that, allowed people to be used just simply as like a broom in the closet. You grab it when you want it and then shut it away when you don't. And that's exactly why we decided we had to start legislating things when businesses refused to treat people as human beings and just use them as another farm implement. I would have liked to heard, does Matt presently work in that situation where they just call him up with a half hour's notice and grab them and then send them home when they don't need them? And I'm sure he wouldn't put up with it. A lot of people say, well, why not just let the market dictate it? You know, people don't want to work there, and pretty soon they'll change their practices. Unfortunately, it's not that way. Way things are, people are so desperate. You gotta have money to eat and stay alive. So you pretty much nowadays, the way things are, you gotta take what's given to you. You don't have a lot of say, so you just have to go there. So free market really doesn't have a chance to work, in my opinion.
Thank you very much for the call. I'm sure there's pressure on employees because of the nature of the way this is all organized now, that you feel like you have to go and take this, otherwise you're not going to have a job, right? Susan?
Yes. One of the things that we observe in our studies across different industries is that what is called worker availability, so being able to work various hours and and being able to tolerate fluctuating hours is very much valued by hiring managers, and people are, you know, hired because they can fill that niche. But if you're someone who has other responsibilities, such as children, and you put any restraints on your availability for work, what we find in our research is that you get, you know, on average fewer hours than your more available counterparts. And it isn't necessarily intentional on the part of managers, so they're not necessarily discriminating against people for these, for having outside responsibility. It's kind of the business model and how it's run to want that labor flexibility. And so, so people try their best often to be as flexible as possible for their employer. And they also, we see escalating rates of involuntary part-time employment. It's come down some since the recession, but it's not coming all the way back to what it was before. And so there are large proportions of workers who are very hungry for hours, and they will, you know, do what it takes, if at all possible.
Mm-hmm. I think that was part of legislation. I'm going to look at in San Francisco, actually, that retailers must offer full-time schedules to part-time employees, which part-timers may decline before they'll bring on any more part-timers.
Yeah, it's not like they don't have to offer full-time hours, but the law is that when somebody leaves and hours become available,
right,
to offer them to your existing staff before you hire someone new.
Yeah. Russ in Bristol, hi.
Hi. How are you today, Kathleen?
Good, Russ. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So I was a small business owner that has
28 employees. I find legislation like this to be potentially intrusive from the aspect that there, my concern is there's always an unintended consequence. When a law gets passed, there's always something that somebody didn't think about. Oh, well, you know, I understand they were trying to get everybody's schedule equalized out so that you know. And we produce a schedule for our employees a month at a time. So I guess that we don't necessarily fall into that. But then, you know, who's monitoring it? How much do we have to input into it? I mean, we were going to provide health insurance at one point for employees. 10% would be covered per year of service. So you work here for 10 years, you have 100% of your insurance paid for. That's never going to happen because when the health system started to get regulated more heavily by the government, it now all has to be equal. Well, I'm not going to pay the guy that just walked on 100% of his insurance. So nobody will ever have that. I guess that's, you know, I think that needs to be thought about. Nobody's, my employees, I love them. They work, you know, they work well for us. People do get called in on occasion because somebody gets sick. We don't have a lot of employees that we can bounce around. Somebody may get called in on their day off. And you know, they're not going to get fired if they don't show up. It helps the team if they do. But I guess, you know, I don't think this is something, they're not chained here though. If they don't like what's going on, they're also, you know, they can leave. We want everybody that works here to be a part of the team and work together. And I think things like this just seem to me that there's huge unintended consequences to it.
Mm-hmm. Is that a possibility, Professor Lambert?
There are always possibilities for unintended consequences. I think the flip side of this is that we can see what is happening because of not doing anything about it. And so we see the high rates of unpredictability, instability. We see high rates of insecurity. We see parents having difficult times taking care of their kids. And so whether those are kind of unanticipated consequences, too, of current business models. But not to be defensive here, I think you know Russ is right. We need to figure out a lot of these different components of the law, and I think one way to do that, and I think it is intentional on at least the part of some municipalities and states, are to focus on certain industries and to for now focus on employers of a particular size who mm-hmm. have more of the institutional capacity to kind of implement these changes. And again, I want to point out that, you know, somebody gets in sick and they have to come in. There, no state or municipality is saying that you can't do that, that an employer can't do that. That what some laws are saying is that when that happens, the person should be compensated for coming in to help you out as an employer because one of your employees called off sick, and that, and most of the legislation is to pay one extra hour of work mm-hmm. To that person.
You know, and Russ sounds like a pretty decent employer here too. He's giving his employees a month in advance schedule.
Yeah.
That's decent.
Absolutely.
That's more than decent, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you, Russ, very much for the call. Billy in Madison, hi.
Hi. I was a banquet manager with 54 employees in the 80s, and I had a schedule that took me 8 or 9 hours to do. And within that schedule were all the requests off for doctor's appointments and things. And one of the things I was wondering if employees now are just not willing to put in that amount of time for a schedule. And then also, like, sometimes there's people get sick and managers have to step in and help bus tables or, you know, do what needs to be done. And
sure.
And then another thing I was wondering is if, you know, if they can make software for scheduling, if that would make it easier for business owners.
Yeah, from my research, it's amazing how much time managers spend on making the schedule. And so it's not as though they are not spending time on it. They're spending a huge amount of time on it, and they're especially spending a lot of time on it because they're making so many adjustments to it all the time. Certainly, again, you know, scheduling software can be a tool that managers can use to, you know, I mean, just the simple process of being able to carry over the schedule from last week to this week to, you know, to feed in information on changing, you know, patterns in traffic or our products or inventory. You know, there are very sophisticated systems now. But even if you did it on a spreadsheet, there is, for a lot of businesses, there is more stability and predictability that might be built on and delivered to employees now, even without all those, you know, kind of sophisticated, you know, technology that we have.
Mm-hmm. Professor Lambert, tell me what legislation we need right now.
Well, I think we need some basic, you know, again, basic labor standards. I think we do need to set a standard that workers should get at least 14 days advance notice. And then we need to have either what might call a predictability premium or, you know, different states and municipalities have different names for that. But there should be some compensation to the employee for being flexible for their employer when the employer really feels that it's necessary to make an adjustment to their schedule. You know, my view is that we should listen to, you know, businesses saying that they have, you know, that it's really important for them to have labor flexibility. It's important for their business model. And so my take on that is that if it's really important, then it means it's helping you make a profit. And so therefore, employees shouldn't shoulder all the burden for those changes, and whether it's 1 hour or it's some other, you know, kind of payment, employees should get something for being so flexible for their employer. And the other things I would advocate for are guaranteed minimum hours. That is not something that any state or municipality is going for, but I do think that when you have a job, you should be able to count on getting a certain number of hours most weeks, maybe not every week, but most weeks. And right now, all of our, you know, no one is giving a minimum number of hours. And in the research I do, sometimes people get 0 hours or 4 hours. And when they're originally hired in and being told that, you know, they're going to get 20 or, you know, 15. And so some kind of honesty and some kind of minimum number of hours would go a long way toward helping create stability in people's lives.
We have time for one more phone call. Richard, thanks for waiting in Madison. Hi, we have about a minute left.
I wish your guest well. Over 10 years ago, our church witnessed a documentary called The High Costs of Low Prices, exposing Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
What's new?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, no, that those, right, it's still the same and more. It's just, it's grown to other industries, and the amount of different, you know, kind of the amount of instability and unpredictability is just, you know, gotten more exacerbated.
And
yes.
Do you couple that with a loss in the strength of unions in this country as well?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the workers and the union groups need to be given, you know, the absolute credit for making work hours part of the public discourse right now, alongside paid sick time and raising the minimum wage. I know that a lot of newspapers and whatever saying, you know, work hours are the next labor fight. Well, they should be the next one, because we still need to nail paid sick time and paid family leave and raising the minimum wage.
Susan, thank you so much for being with us. It was a lively hour. A lot of interest in the topic. Susan Lambert, Associate Professor of Social Service Administration at the University of Chicago. For 20 years now, she's been studying hourly jobs and workplace practices in several industries and has looked at this national survey data that we've been talking about this hour on the problem of scheduling practices in the United States, and they are significant. Some states or cities are addressing those. Thanks very much to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP Whaley as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We ask that you get your pen and pencils ready for the next hour. Daniel Golden is here. It's a book list for spring reading. He's got some really intriguing titles. We'll talk all about them following the news.